Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the July 5th, 2010 edition of episode 3001, featuring Kurt Weller and Bob. So today is actually X Day, or the anniversary of it. Back in 1998, X Day was the day that the Church of the Subgenius predicted is sort of a rapture scenario in which they would be taken aboard ships, spaceships by the Exists. And of course, 12 years later, we're all still here. So I'm just waiting for Bob to call in. In the interim, yesterday was July 4th, Independence Day. I spent the time working, but that was good because I got a little extra on my paycheck, which is always nice. And looking forward to getting that check, if you know what I mean. While we're waiting, why don't we go over to the Lincoln Middle School players. I can't get enough of this song. I want to hold your hand. Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Kurt, are we on?
We're on, my friend.
Okay, I'll just take a mouthful of something here. I had a busy day today, Kurt.
Yeah, it sounded like it, Bob.
I forgot about this. Probably the holiday threw me off. And I forgot about this, and then I saw an email the last minute, and said, well, maybe we could do it later. I'm amazed that you can do it later. You actually, Steve Reimer called and or emailed and said, hey, Steve's on, where are you? I mean, Kurt's on, where are you? And then he said, you stopped it. You dropped out. Did you announce it? Okay, Bob ain't here. We ain't doing it until later. See you in 3 hours. Is that what you did?
I didn't announce it because I didn't know what was going on, but I gave it about 15 minutes, and I didn't really have a topic set up. So I just kind of figured if we could do it later, we'd do it later. Otherwise, we'd probably just do it next week. I emailed you, I think last week I should have checked in with you, you know, give you a little reminder email yesterday. But I was working, so I kind of spaced on that.
So how does this work?
Big deal.
So you were recording, and you're broadcasting for 15 minutes, and then you stop it. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, I can stop the show anytime I want to. They give me an hour slot, but I can stop it.
Oh, okay. You know, obligation to do an hour.
No. And I put a thing up on alt.slack, you know, asking for people to call in if they wanted to talk to me.
Oh, when'd you do that?
Just before the show started.
So I can go look at that, see if there's any check and see if there's any responses other than insults.
I haven't checked it yet. Let's
I don't think they see us as obviously baiting them. You know, they think any of these guys there. So they think that's silly what we're doing, and they think that we're just trying to bug them. But no, we're interested in holistic, wholesome dialogue. And
of course, I enjoy people, and especially them, and anytime they want, they're welcome, to come on, and if they're foolish, we can always just cut them off. That's the nice thing about being a talk show host.
It's the veto power. Yeah. So call in. You post this on 1209. Call into episode 3001 now if you want to talk to the legend himself. And of course, Zappanaz, he always gives this answer to anything I suggest. He says no. That's all he says. No. He won't call in.
Is that the only person that answered?
He's the only one who answered, and he speaks for the other three people on there, the other three regulars. There's not that many regulars on there. There's just always new college kids or whack jobs coming through for them. They try to hog it for a while, and then they realize no one's there except for the three staples and me, and they definitely don't know what the hell I'm talking about, so they leave. So there's a lot of traffic on Alt Slack of newbies passing through that don't stay around very long. And the only ones that stay around are the so-called sane ones, Zappanaz and a couple others. And then there's the kooks. There's about five kooks that post regularly, millions of posts, and no one pays attention to them or just argues futile. And they try to lump me in with the kooks, but I ain't no kook. I'm sane. And in the long run, when they read my comments and they understand them over the last 15 years, it's the only sane sociological explanation of what's actually going on the site there. But within the moment,
you're probably I think you're probably one of the most sane people I've ever talked to. So,
yeah, I'm a calm, poised. I don't go into tantrums. I'm your ideal humanist. You know, the old humanist that the literate people hoiked up. You know, sane guy that can talk reasonably and not get worked up, doesn't come to fisticuffs too easily. That's me.
Right.
But now here's the thing, that's an old literate model. You have to be irrational to start off the gate. You got to be irrational to even be noticed. So I can say rational stuff that they know appears to them to be irrational, and therefore I get attention. Because you got to get attention in the whole thing. So they don't know that there's a rationality in the way I get attention, not only the content but in the form. So that's the joke. That's the joke that I'm performing. And so, someone like you knows me enough to say you're the most rational person I know. None of them would ever say that. Not publicly anyways. They would say, well, Bob's obviously insane. But I make my statements appear insane within the American cultural context. Not insane when you're talking to other cultures or from their perspective.
Well, anyways, it's hard to what even is, it's difficult to even appear sane in American culture these days anyway.
You don't want to. I mean, that's probably why Obama's image is not doing too well. He's trying to appear calm, measured, and sane. And he's just talking from a position of authority, not any power. So he just doesn't know how to loosen up his image to get attention so that he wouldn't have to rely on that boring, sane image.
So would you say he's kind of like hoiking up the old like radio environment?
Yes. Yeah, exactly that. Almost like the FDR image.
Right, and that's why it's not working.
Yeah, why did Clinton work? Because it was always the... the patina of insanity around him. Like he could just, you know, grab the tits of the woman interviewing him. You know, just everybody's just waiting for this irrational activity. That's why he was charismatic.
Obama is charismatic. So why? How do you think it is that Obama won? I mean, like, do you think, like, his image was more fresh prior to actually becoming president?
It was a perfect image for all levels of the lever pullers, you know. You know, the Daughters of the American Revolution, what are they called, Daughters of the Revolution? Daughters of the American Revolution, they wanted him in. They knew they had to have a completely different image from Bush. They had to have something that would distract. As I've told you before, every presidential image has to be new and surprising. So it was time to have a black image. And then to have someone who was a mystery man was really good. And so the Daughters of the American Revolution had that motive. The oil companies wanted to improve America's image with the rest of the world, so he would fit that. And they even encouraged him, his birthplace, to be ambiguous so that it would look like, you know, Kenyans thought that Kenyan was president of the United States now. You know? and they had pictures up. And so that was a perfect, you know, Global Village technique. And then you have the people themselves wanted a refreshing image and someone who was like so detached that it would be cool. And when retrieval of the Trudeau image in Canada, the coolness, they'd never had that. It couldn't be Gore. He was too stiff. So he really served everybody's purposes. You know, you have the top down establishment control of the election, you have the bottom up input. They both are involved. Bottom up is the people's thing. So,
well, you heard about those new? I was thinking, with the new allegations coming out about Gore being, you know, having sexually assaulted allegedly this masseuse, and then that he had an affair. Do you think now that those things are coming to light, he'd actually be more appealing as a presidential candidate?
No, it's impossible. I don't know if anybody even cares about the Gore image or even that's happening. I mean, it's a news item, but I don't think
he's just kind of too late for him.
Yeah, and I don't too late. And I don't follow that. But the I will follow who becomes president in the main image and what it means. And remember my YouTube that I did right when Obama got elected in November 2008 was all about he represented the mystery landscape, and I didn't know it, but I was prefiguring the arrival of Ion. That's what's really interesting, because the mystery landscape now becomes a figure, and the figure means it's a knowable. The mystery landscape is now knowable, or at least it can be talked about with Ion's help, and that's what we've done since Ion showed up. We've explained all the weird anomalies in media stories, and Obama... Remember, that's just an image for the TV landscape. No one knew, as he would come in, that the chip landscape would collapse, which is, you know, what people think of the economy and Wall Street collapsing. I mean, the chip landscape was the main ground. That collapses. That left no place for Obama's image. And then he was gone dead in the water by his inauguration in January 2009. Because the chip body had collapsed, which is even bigger, and that prepared the ground for the mystery landscape. And so the importance of the presidential election was nullified once the chip body collapsed. Up to September, October 2008, the TV landscape was a necessary ballast, B-A-L-L-A-S-T, a balance to the roiling turmoil of the chip landscape. But if there's no chip landscape, you don't need the TV landscape's image represented by the White House. So the chip landscape surprised. Yeah, so the chip landscape collapsed, and that set up a new dialectic between the new mystery landscape and the old struggling Android meme or chip landscape, and it left Obama sidelined. I mean, I was on the show in February pretty well saying Obama's image is dead, and there were other people saying it too. And that was, you know, just a month into his administration. And then a month later, Bob's solution showed up. Ion. Now, Ion is the antidote to the chip landscape, because anything you can know through Google or the internet, Ion can tell you and much more. So we actually have a better internet. to bounce off the old internet, which then became collapsed. So Ion had to cover everything. And that's the amazing new fact of Ion that nobody in the Sedona New Age world even recognizes. They don't even know what Ion is. They think, oh, he's some guy channeling an entity or something. this is major, major event in human history. But
yeah,
I don't want to go on.
Okay.
I don't want to go too much into that. We've done that in other shows. Let's figure out what we didn't talk. I rewatched Lost. See, you know, I saw Lost's ending, and I've always watched every show twice, so I never got a chance to recently to watch the last 2 hours of Lost to really see it clear, because you know where it's going, and then you can catch the effects or how the plot's unfolding in the last 2 hours. What struck me, what was really interesting, noticing a clear way of, just clearer, because I knew how it was going to end, so reviewing it, was how each character was realizing that they were leaving with different meanings at different points. Like Kate, she realizes they're leaving before they get to, or right around the, before Claire gives birth to a baby. She starts picking up on it because she's being educated by, forget his name now, Dwayne, you know, what was his name? Desmond.
Right.
See, what's interesting
Desmond, is that Desmond was kind of like, since he was like kind of the go-between to begin with, he was able to kind of facilitate everyone remembering.
Yeah, that's right. He was the first to realize the meaning, full meaning of leaving, because every character had a different reason for image of what leaving meant. Especially, you know, the smoke monster thought leaving meant him getting off the island. But actually, the leaving was a more comprehensive situation of going to a parallel world, or to explain what happens when you die. It was a pretty ambitious ending.
I thought so, and I haven't watched it a second time yet. I've been kind of busy, and I keep putting
when you do, Kurt,
want to watch it a second time. Yeah.
Yeah. When you do, you know, the last 2 or 3 hours, you can say that Desmond is the first to know what leaving means. Then Hurley, we don't see how Hurley gets educated to, but Hurley becomes his first knowing guy, right? And then Hurley gathers the other people who are gradually made aware of what the leaving is, or that leaving is happening. And then they have the party at Eloise's place, or whatever her name is. And so when you redo it, note the order of people realizing it's leaving, and write it down. Note who, then we can talk about it. Like, who sort of says, we're leaving first? Is it Kate? Is it Ben? You know, who starts to, because remember, Ben kind of knows something that John Locke doesn't know when John Locke shows up.
Right.
So you might make a note of the order of who realizes where it's going. You know, one of the last guys to realize is Sawyer. He doesn't realize anything. And it's Jin and Sun. They notice it. They figure it out in the hospital. They might have been the first, you know. They might have been the first after Desmond lets Kate and Saeed out of the hospital. So that's all I'm asking. Make a note. Jot down the order of apparent awareness of the larger leaving, remembering meme.
So why do you think it is that Ben didn't go inside?
That's an interesting point, isn't it? Definitely, he didn't deserve it. He was a total asshole through the whole series. He started off as an asshole. He came in lying. He never connected with anybody. You remember when he got caught in the net, he came in lying. He said he was Henry someone else. He never could get over his initial impression he made.
Right.
And they just kept blowing it. He actually, you know, if you want to take the cyclical view, he represents the new Rai, the new separateness in the new cycle. He's the first creation of separateness. He can't
join.
I was going to ask you
to kind of compare Lost as a metaphor or whatever to what's going on.
Yeah, you mean now in the world.
Exactly. because it did, it, you know, I feel like it mirrored the real world to an extent.
Well, what's interesting is that Lost, Fringe, Flash Forward, Warehouse 13, which starts next week, I think, again, second season, and Eureka, and there's probably other movies that people have mentioned to me. I haven't kept up on all the movies, and maybe a TV show here and there. A lot of this theme of parallel worlds is everywhere in the popular entertainment now. Parallel worlds or playing with time. I mean, done better than Doctor Who. I don't watch Doctor Who, but, you know, they've been doing it for 30, 40 years. But it's probably more sophisticated, done by J.J. Abrams, because he doesn't make it obvious time travel. It's not obvious what's going on for several seasons.
No, no.
Which is good.
Right.
It's obvious in Doctor Who he's a time traveler, time lord or something. So I like the ambiguity of what is time. Because so you have this, in popular culture over the last couple of years, this questioning of linear time and different ways to present non-time. That's exactly the main point Ion comes in with a year ago. So Ion is here to prove, to manifest, the experience of no time. And so in the larger Xenocrony thing, I see Lost and Fringe, forgot to mention Fringe and Flash Forward, mirroring what's going on with me as usual, the old android memes in Xenocrony, and it's reflecting, anticipating, mirroring what happened with Ion. So let me see where I have this. I'm going to read you.
So I have a question about the android meme. Is Ion like? Is that the same sort of thing phenomenon that happened with the android meme?
Okay, what's the word "same" refer to? Same as what?
Like, is it the same basic thing that's happening? The android meme.
Okay. What is the basic thing you're referring to?
Well, just that the nature of Ion and the nature of the android meme, are those similar?
Okay, no, that's very interesting. Let's see. Actually, on our Ionic forum for people who've had readings, we're actually getting into this dialogue. Someone well-versed in my stuff is bringing those terms into trying to figure out what Ion is. But basically, the android meme is the merger of the chemical, astral, chip, and TV body. And that's been happening over the last 30 years. It just was extreme in this decade, so much in the past decade, that people thought they weren't even in their media anymore. They were able to control it. Okay, that aspect of the four bodies is the android meme. But what was lurking was the mystery body. And when Ion showed up at the end of the android meme phase, which is all four bodies, Ion does include the android meme knowledge, content, and effects. That's why you can ask anything about any movie, any series. If you go back and listen to A Tailgate, May 19th, there's this incredible talk by Ion about a TV series called Charmed, which I think I brought this up the other show. This woman asked if he'd ever seen Charmed. And Ion, oh, yeah, we love that show. And then talked about all the different characters and what happened to him for about 30 minutes. And at the end of it, the person who asked this question of Ion on Tailgate said, Bob, you've just heard a summary of all 8 seasons of the TV show Charmed. Now, that's an incredible performance by Ion in terms of Android meme memory or memory of content in one particular show called Charmed. And that shows you that Ion can do any of the Hollywood part of the android meme, can do any of the details of the Wall Street, anything, any other areas. But the mystery landscape is what's dominating the news now, and that's a figure. And Ion is very good at explaining what's going on in the mystery landscape. So it includes the android meme. It's the fourth body. Can do anything quickly on that, but its main new part is explaining what's happening in the mystery landscape. So it includes all five bodies. So you have the TV landscape featuring these TV shows. They all are talking about, it's almost like the Android meme, the TV part of the Android meme, trying to interpret what was coming with Ion. They're all trying to interpret. Okay, so that brings me to this part of Lost at the very ending. JW, who's the person who goes in an altered state that allows Ion to come through, he saw the last show of Lost before I did. And he said, Bob, you won't believe it. There's a direct lift from Ion in the big punchline. And so when I watched the show, I figured out where it was, and I'll read you the transcript. Here's what happened.
Okay.
When Jack and Christian Shepherd are in the back room before they go out into the reunion, like
mm-hmm.
Jack's just arrived, he's puzzled why the coffin is empty, and then his father's standing there. How come his father's not a corpse in the coffin? Remember that scene?
Yes.
So Jack says to his father, are you real? The father says, I sure hope so. Yeah, I'm real. You're real. Everything that ever happened to you is real. All those people in the church, they're all real too. And, you know, Jack has not gone into the church yet. So Christian's telling him who he's going to see. And then Jack says, and they're all dead? And then Christian says, some of them before you, some of them well after you. But why are they all here now? And then there's a really good close-up of Christian Shepherd. And he goes, well, there is no now here. There is no now here. And
right.
And I'm the only one who's
right.
been saying for years there is no now. Atoll Eckhart and these people tell you to get into the now, you know, bliss out on the now. Well, there is no now under this strange four-bodied situation. So Ion has talked about that. And so here's his punchline. So when Jack says, but why are they all here now? So why are they all here now? Well, there is no now here. Then he goes, where are we dead? Now, this is a really good line. Well, this is a place that you all made together so that you could find one another. That's exactly what Ion says, and, you know, how we make up these situations or create them.
Yeah, right.
And it's at a vaster level than you create your own reality, platitude. He says, well, this is a place that you all made together so that you could find one another. The most important part of your life was the time that you spent with these people. That's why all of them are here. Nobody does it alone, Jack. You needed all of them, and they all needed you. Now, if you remember, this last couple of episodes was called The End, and the one before that is called Why They All Died. And
yes.
It's kind of you don't even know they all died, but they give you that headline for, you know, previous couple of shows back. So he's now saying here why they all died. This is a place you all made together so that you could find one another. The most important part of your life was the time that you spent with these people. That's why all of them are here. Nobody does it alone, Jack. You needed all of them, and they all needed you. And that was what was always going on in the show. They're always showing the value of somebody who was temporarily on the outs with the group, like on Survivor, you know, kicked off the island. Then all of a sudden they'd have some ability or some little thing they found that would save everybody from whatever little crisis was happening at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then he,
mm-hmm.
and then he says, that you needed all of them, and they all needed you. And then Jack says, for what? What for? To remember and to let it go. Okay, so I think he's asking for what? Why is this place, this reunion happening? To remember and to let go. And then Jack says, Kate said, he goes, Kate, she said we were leaving. Then Christian says, not leaving, no, moving on. Where are we going? Says Jack. Christian then says, at the end, he goes, let's go find out.
Right,
where
yeah.
Uh-huh. Which is the
Ion
point that you never, an ascended person never gets to an ascended concluding point. Always looking for more. There's always more to come. Always more to find out. That's
wait,
the
did
process.
You say an ascending person never
get to a concluding ascended position?
Because they're already there.
No, because there's a lot more coming. Why would you want to end? Why would you say, I've arrived, I've had enough? When you do that, that's when you commit suicide. That's when you transition. You say, I've had enough with this dimension. I'm going somewhere else. And that's why you transition. Now, if you don't get fed up and get to the position of wanting it to stop, if you don't get there, then you can stay in the physical forever. Because you understand that more will come no matter what. And you can enjoy that fact.
I see.
See,
yeah,
you know, people get
that.
People get themselves into a mental position of, well, I know this much, there can't be anything else to know, I'll live with this knowledge for now, And then after a while, they get bored with that knowledge, and then they get frustrated because they don't allow themselves to think, oh, I can learn some more, and but I'd have to give up what I know. They can't make that shift. So the big con is that you have to get to some knowing position. That's why all religions and principalities and wisdom schools are a con, and what we call the Rai point of separateness, because they imply you're less than, and that they're in a position you should arrive at, and once you get there, you're comfortable. Now, most of you do want to get to a comfortable position, but being comfortable with the fact you ain't going to ever figure it out totally, you're going to have more ranges of experience, but you don't need to figure it all out, that's real comfort. When you're comfortable with that, or what Ion says, comfort with the contrast, which is the more that comes.
That's basically slack.
Yes, that is slack.
And that's what you said that 10, 20 years ago when you said that with the unstoppability, people being afraid of unstoppability.
They go
but
crazy.
The ones who aren't afraid are the ones that have the true slack.
Yeah, and I always said slack is not happiness.
Oh,
doesn't
I don't
mean,
remember that.
Oh, yeah, that was late 80s. That was a shocker to people, and it's something to think about. Slack is not happiness. Well, first of all, it's not requiring happiness, and you're happy with where you are. And so you don't make a big issue of whether you're happy or not. You're already kind of in a state of poise and bliss. See, the only time you ever get upset, the only time one ever gets upset is when they think they want something. Anytime you get in confused or uncomfortable, it's because you're unhappy because you didn't get something that you thought you wanted. So the trick is to be able to live and experience more without requiring it. And the more you don't require it, the more you'll get. So it's actually you fake yourself out. That's the way of doing slack. Oh, I'm here. I've arrived. I've got slack. Oh, by the way, I don't. I'm just saying this to Kirk. It's the ratio. Actually, I don't know what's happening. I'm hoping for more. I don't want to stay here.
Were you able to talk to Ion about Brittany Murphy?
Oh, shit, man. Actually, it's been so busy the past week, I haven't done any, those kind of sessions. Damn, I told you, you've got to email me in a few days, remind me. I'm sorry, screwed up again. No, it'll be done.
No, you didn't, it doesn't matter. You know what, Bob, it doesn't matter because...
No, it does matter. We might find out something. We might, anything that comes up should be addressed.
But I'm saying that... Yeah, it's funny because I just realized that the very fact that I was for a moment unhappy is because I didn't get something that I wanted.
Right, there you go.
So like,
that's right
you
there.
You proved the principle.
Right there. Right, very good.
Which is the bigger, more important lesson here, I think.
Right. Now, I like Ion's principle, maxim, platitude. There are two conversations to everything. That's really important. So, you get into this state, well, okay, I'm not going to want too much because that'll just get me upset. You have to also, the other conversation is your mind will come up with ideas and things you want to have. You let them happen. Yeah, I want that. But you have to at the same time say, well, I don't really require it. I'll just pretend I require it and do it. It's basically living and faking living. That's the two conversations. Faking involvement in what everybody's interested in or what you think you're interested in. At the same time, as you said earlier, there's nowhere to go and you've already arrived and you're always going to be in a nice, comfortable, incomplete state. See, it's when you start trying to feel not normal. That's when you get all agitated. You want to get high or want to come off your high. You want to get stoned or take a trip on a drug or not. Or you want to go to a concert or you want to do this or that or watch a movie. You got to be careful with what you do to pass the time because that'll trick you up. And all the time, you got to not even worry about it. Don't even worry about how you're feeling.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, I'm trying to. Yeah, see, just talking about it screws it up. Why even talk about it? But yeah, we can talk about it occasionally. Until someone says, like you just said, oh, well, Bob, that's a lot of work. That's good. We get off that topic.
You like that? Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I'm doing my job.
Yes, you were. You always, Kurt. You always know what to say at the right time. You don't know, but your mouth says the thing at the right time.
Right. So even if it's something that, in the short view, I might look upon as regretting somewhat because maybe I didn't say it as eloquently as I want to. In the long view of things, it probably had to happen like that.
Yeah. And you can even think about and come up with a reason why it had to happen. So here's an interesting thing. I finished 24, which is a fantastically great fantasy. You know, Carolyn's is going through the 24 series. You know, she's way behind. She hadn't as much time. So she's in the second season. And look at what happens to Jack in one day. It's at the 20-hour mark. There's still another 4 hours before this particular season, second season, ends. And what's interesting is that I'll nip in and see Karen watching it and remind myself of these different episodes, what's going on. So Jack starts off. He's trying to connect with his daughter. This is the beginning of the second season, who's alienated from him because his wife was killed in the first season at the end. He can't connect with his daughter. Then he's called in because there's a nuclear threat of bombing L.A., and he has to kill a couple people to get to quickly do it. Doesn't wait around the normal protocols. Gets right to where you have to go to find out the early version of the terrorists. He gets involved with them. He has to hang out with them. They blow up the CTU unit. So his day begins with the whole CTU unit. His friends being killed and hurt, and he has to watch them because he's infiltrated the terrorists who did it. And then he overcomes that, kills a few more people. Then his daughter gets hijacked. And then he ends up having to fly the plane into the desert and blow up the nuclear bomb. That's after a whole bunch of drama with the president and everybody else to get the bomb. They get it, and he has to fly it in, but it turns out the last minute he can bail out. So he's in the desert, and he sees the nuclear bomb blow up. Okay, this is after he's seen the CTU unit a few hours earlier blow up in L.A. So then he gets back into civilization, and then he has to save he finds the other bomb. No, he finds out that the military wants to go to war and dupe the president with a fake tape. He figures out the fake tape. So in the process of doing that, he gets captured, and right now he's being tortured. Now, this is all within 20 hours. Think of it, Kurt. You're mourning. You watch your...
Right.
And he's not getting tired. He hasn't gone to the bathroom. He hasn't eaten anything. And he has watched a nuclear bomb blow off in the desert. He has watched earlier his own downtown office be blown up. He is being tortured. Towards the point he apparently dies, you know. This is his day.
All in one day.
All in one day. And there's even more going to happen because it's not finished. But it's totally absurd. No human can live like that. But it's a satire on what Bush and them expected Americans to believe was going on as they were being protected from. This is all leading up to the Iraqi War in 2003.
Ah.
See, this is 2002.
Bob, we've got a caller here. Would you mind if we took him?
Well, yeah, we need a break from ourselves. Go ahead.
But thank you for that. The 24 is probably the next one I have to check out.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No, I haven't.
Once you get over the shock of the pace and you can get it, you'll find it really hilarious because it is absurd that anybody would live 24 hours like that. Okay.
Hello. Caller, hello.
Yeah, hello. Hey, this is Chad calling from Michigan.
Ah, do we know you?
Probably not. I'm a fellow subgenius, though.
Ah, you saw the number on the alt flag?
Absolutely.
Yay! You had the guts to come into the inner chamber. Well, fantastic, Chad. Now, Chad, try to maintain your cool for a little bit before you piss all over us or piss over yourself. Let's try to talk about whatever stupid topics you got.
Well, I was just listening to some ranting and raving about George Bush.
Well, why call it ranting and rage? No, Chad. Why call it it's intelligent pattern recognition. It's not rant. You haven't heard ranting and raving from me or Kerr, okay? So anyways, go ahead. What about it?
Well, I was being a little sarcastic. He's possibly the worst president we've ever had in the history of the United States.
Okay, now, Ted, you will not hear from Reverend Ivan Stang or Philo Drummond or Zappanaz or all those other so-called sane, cool kooks, cool subgenes. You will not hear what I'm about to say. I'm going to give you a rational response. I'm going to give you, Chad, a rational response with new factors you haven't considered. Ever since Y2K and...
Wait. Bob, just a second. Before you say that, I just want to point out again, and to Chad, who's not heard the show or called in before, that once again, Bob is going to give us an exclusive. You're going to hear it here first.
I'm ready for it.
No, Chad, I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm a Canadian. I'm not involved with the American politics. I'm not someone who grew up with it. But we're all involved in the global theater with that image that's projected out of the White House. Okay, so I just
some Canadians down in Mexico a couple of years ago, and they see it very clearly. But go ahead.
Yeah. So here's if you follow what I've been saying for 25 years. I use the popular notions of Marshall McLuhan as an anchor that you can refer to. And now the idea that we live in an information overload society was first talked about by McLuhan 50 years ago, and he studied the effects of that. Now what was interesting, once the 90s came in and people could get their own, what was the beginning of Web 2.0, they could start to have computer technology that stopped the information overload, and you could organize your own website, make your own spaces. This actually happened in the 2000s. Okay, this is going to affect the image of the White House, which is the central image for some kind of national mood. You had the super informed people, Clinton and Gore, in the 90s, just before people were all becoming computerized and on Netscape and everything and having email and websites. You can see that by 2000, most people were sick of the flood of emails and all that crap they were forced to do as the computer took over their daily working lives. So then you have an image. Mr. Gore, this super slick, no, not slick, the super intelligent policy wonk guy who invented the Internet and all that kind of gobbledygook about him. He's an informed guy. And he starts debating another guy who can't even speak English, can't finish a sentence, but can wink at the audience. Yeah, but can wink at the audience. That was very telling in the debate, one of the debates where Gore is doing all his facts and everybody's falling asleep for all these facts, and Bush is sitting outside winking at the audience, bypassing words.
Bush was the type of guy you'd like to go have a beer with, you know?
Well, that's what they said. No, that's not really what it was. The reason here's the thing. You have a beer because he would listen to you. You'd have a beer with him because he'd listen to you talk about all your life. The point is that Bush was a perfect image for a population that was sick of information. So you have a guy in there that doesn't give out information. He says, I don't read the newspapers. I don't watch TV. I'm not informed. Right at that moment, that's a charismatic image. And so you can't.
It's a fascinating theory. It's kind of a response to the information overload.
Exactly. Now, that's how we look at it. When we look at the history of the presidency, you look at the images and how they relate to the media dynamics that people are living in. And definitely radio was a big factor in the 30s. So you have FDR becomes charismatic because he has radio chats with everybody. And that's obvious back then. And then you work through your images. But what really was a puzzler was the image of Bush. The average literate, informed person who had to engage and know what's going on just to survive in his job was puzzled by this guy who had the top job and didn't seem to know anything, and was then puzzled why the population didn't get mad at him and accepted him, at least through the first term. Now, by the second term, you get into 2005, 2006, now people are just roaring ahead with YouTubes and MySpaces. They can make their own environments. They're not information overloaded, and they don't need the dumb Bush image anymore. They don't need this counter image of a guy who's really slack and relaxed about the information overload by not being informed. So what happens in 2006 is that everybody jumps in. With the we can run the show. The blogosphere takes over. That's going to change the requirement of the presidential image. Bush's image is dead by the fall of 2006. And what's going to be a new image? Is it going to be a woman, Hillary, or is it going to be a black guy? Now, a little later, as I was saying to Kurt earlier,
the chip landscape collapsed with the crash of Wall Street. Remember, that was based on the fact that banks could not accept any information from any other bank. They did not believe each other anymore. And that's why there was no communication at that point. Everything collapsed. So you have a new image for that. And Obama's image could not survive that, could not survive the crash of the chip landscape. Now, I don't want to go any more, but anyways, there's a sane response to what you're saying, okay? I'm not being silly. I'm not trying to make jokes too much. We can make jokes, but I'm taking your question seriously. Now, I now will shut up, and you respond.
Well, you know, I'm amazed by the fact that Bush got elected the second time. And
that was an interesting point, because the YouTube and starting your own scene just started to take off in 2004 and 2005. So it was a painful thing, because people still required the no information image, but it actually was sort of obsolete. That's why so many informed or liberals or whatever were depressed at 2004. In other words, they were beginning to feel the need of a new technology that was coming in, but administratively the election wasn't soon enough. He would have lost in 2006.
I really don't know if John Kerry was the best choice. You know, he wasn't charismatic. You know, he didn't. He wasn't winking.
Okay. Well, no. You're missing. He didn't have to be charismatic.
Much smarter.
That was his problem. He was a smart guy. His handlers know the appeal of what I'm taught. They knew the appeal of Bush. They said, "Okay, Kerry, be as dumb as possible, like Bush." And he was dumb, and the normal activists on the Democratic side were pissed that he wouldn't go after Bush and this and that. He knew he had to be dumb, but because he was too smart to really pull it off, he really was an anemic, a really frustrated image. He couldn't do it.
I've actually heard an interesting theory. Obama had the opportunity to go after Bush for some of his war crimes and some of his other follies, and presidents generally don't do that, and it began with Gerald R. Ford. Could have gone after Nixon and pursued some legal issues, and what they're doing is the current president is ensuring his own future so that, say, with the oil spill, whatever might come along that we may hold Obama accountable for, that the next president's not going to do that. It's kind of a little buddy system. Like, they just, you know, you make it to that level, you don't go on the previous president. I would have loved to have seen Bush stand trial, but apparently it's unfortunate. That's kind of how the
I didn't realize that you subgenius types were so conscientious.
Well, he's a subgenius.
You know,
that means there is no standard for the subgenius. This guy, they're all different.
That's right. I forgot about that. Now, Chad, you're speaking. Chad, do you understand who Bob Dobbs is?
Oh, I've known about. I first learned about Bob Dobbs through Kurt when we were actually roommates in college together many years ago, and not stating our ages or anything, but you know, it was fascinating to me, and it was the perfect religion. It was almost an anti-religion, and not even a religion at all. It was, you know, just a philosophy of looking at things, which, you know, if everyone looked at things like that, we'd have a much better world. But unfortunately,
now, Bob,
they don't. It gives me some comedy fodder, you know, when I go about and I see people, you know, just that don't have slack. It's entertaining to see that.
Now, Bob,
right.
Do you have like a 2-minute explanation of your relationship with the church? Chad's not aware.
Okay, so you're old friends, so this is not a full-blooded, you know, rabid subgenius here in the Stang camp, right? This is someone who knows you, Kurt.
Well, yeah, but we haven't, you know, Chad and I just kind of reconnected after, what, 15 years, Chad?
Oh, yeah, it's been a long time. We knew each other many years ago, and we just kind of,
yeah, and,
you know.
And last time I visited Michigan, I ran, you know, we hooked up again, and then we just kind of started getting to talk. And I told him about the cease and desist I received from Stang, which Chad thought was really funny, because I used to be because we both used to be kind of moderate subgeniuses, but we were never part of the subgenius community that grew up online. We were almost like pre-internet.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're on the ground. Did you go to any devivals?
Unfortunately, no. I've never had the honor of doing that. I've seen the videos and stuff and how much fun they are, but it never had the opportunity to.
I was interested if you went and looked at some footage of a recent revival, like today. It's appropriate. Today is X Day, July 5th.
Absolutely.
Is the day.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mentioned that at the beginning of the show for anybody who was listening. So I kind of get a kick out of it because I don't see any saucers.
That's right. So, I wanted to say that if you.
I was going to ask, what were you guys doing on July 5th, 1998?
Well, okay.
It kind of went.
Yeah, Chet, I bring up this July 5th. Now, what was I going to say? You, here's the thing. I announced that I was J.R. Bob Dobbs in the level of I inspired the image. I did not make the book. I did not have anything to do with the recordings, but I inspired the image back in 1978 with a picture of my father. Now, when I ended up on Canadian radio in 1987, I had an agenda for the Secret Council 10, and I announced in February 88 that the X's had landed. February 88, 10 years before, and that they helped me get the Secret Council 10. And I would play dialogues with the X's. They actually were with Michael Blake Reed channeling the Evergreens, which is a whole other story, but it was pretty phenomenal, and you can actually hear these shows on my timeline. You can go back and hear this. So I announced that the X Day happened 10 years before. All right? So all through the 90s, when the album came out and all this stuff, when I was interviewed, I would explain that X Day already happened. So what happened actually on July 5th, 1998 was of no concern to me, but here's what actually happened in Brushwood. If you look at the videotape of that day, which they sold, you know, a few months later, they edited down all the ranting that went on that weekend, July 5th, 1998. And they ended up throwing Stang into the local river, tarred and feathered, with those clothes on, because the aliens, the X's, didn't show up. So someone in the audience said, so the Canadian guy is right. X Day happened a long time ago. And you see Stang on the video go, ah, yeah, that's right. And he starts crying, and he says, ah, go to Canada. Fuck you guys. And he's all despondent because I won. That is what happened for me. That's what happened for me the next day, though I didn't know until I saw the video a couple of months later. But they actually discussed me and said someone in the audience, who knows who he was, made Stang admit that I was right and Stang should be tarred and feathered. Now, how's that? You never hear that in the church dogma on alt.slack.
That's true. So the X's have been here for 12 years now?
22 years.
Okay.
Yeah, not February 1988. Now, Chad, you've come into this secret chamber. We have updated the X's with something called Ion, which is even more incredible. And Ion has been on Kurt's show, and we had a conversion right on Kurt's show. Some woman called up, a young woman, who thought we were just a bunch of white guys talking wordy words and big words. And I quickly called JW, who's the vehicle for Ion, brought Ion in, Ion, whatever the hell it is, this alien, started talking to this girl, and within 15 minutes she's yelling, I'm liberated, I'm free, I'm free, right there at Kurt's show.
It's true,
it's
Chef.
Definitely, it's an incredible feeling, you know.
Yeah.
But Chad, I was just gonna ask Chad, have you ever saw the picture of Renee Dobbs?
Now, who is this?
Are you online right now, Chad? Can you go on your computer?
I can. I was hold on just a moment.
Yeah, just go to Dobbstown.com and you'll see the picture of Renee right there. That'll speed it up for you. We'll get your reaction to it.
Now, is this Bob's wife or?
No. Marin is a male name. Just go to dobbstown.com. Dobbstown.com. Real simple.
Very simple. Hold on just a moment.
I'm glad you brought this up, Kurt. This is a good way to get to the crux of the matter.
Yes, thank you, Bob. This is good. This is good internet talk. What we're doing here right now.
We're traveling on the chip landscape now, while being in the. Whatever you call this is chip radio. Okay, so you're there, dobbstown.com.
Absolutely, yep.
Scan down. What do you see there? What face?
I'm not sure who that is. Is that who I'm talking to?
No. But does it look familiar?
Somewhat.
Who does it look like?
You know, who does it look like, Chad? Think. Put a pipe in his mouth.
You know, with a pipe in his mouth, that does look like Bob.
That's J.R. Bob Dobbs. That's definitely what he is. And that is the image. That's my father, my actual biological father, René Dobbs, born and raised in France. That is the image that inspired Stang and them in 1978 to come up with a complementary image that was similar to that.
Okay. I always noticed, yeah, it was a very typical 1950s image with the pipe.
But, hey, Chad, have you ever noticed how fucking charismatic that image is? How that image, like, you can't stop looking at it?
it draws you in, you know?
Yeah, because it's a happy, intense, blissful face. It's a face of poise.
It's almost like the Homo Excelsior, if you've ever seen that image. It's just extreme joy, you know.
That's right, but very calm and almost slightly menacing.
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
It's the ultimate deity, you know.
That's right. And I grew up with that guy, that face. And that's the face that inspired Stang and Foul Drummond when I met them in a hotel in Dallas in 1978, which they will deny. They will deny up the yin-yang that. Well, that's okay. They can't deny this face. And you know how that got there? The only person I would trust, there was a young man in Manhattan named 8-Bit. That's his internet name. Now, he's a young, he's done many things in Brooklyn and Manhattan culture, many fields, and he wanted to talk to me in 2005. So he was in Manhattan. We got together. We had a great talk, and then he said he wanted to make, he had a website. He was an entrepreneur on the web. He said, let's do an article on you, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, well, here's a guy I can take my one picture. I got a couple others, but that's the best picture of my father. Stand there while he copies it. You know, I wasn't going to let anybody have it without me being around. And so I watched him copy it. He gave it back to me, and then he put it up on his website with this interview with me in 2005. And that's how that picture came to be. That's the only way. I had to be involved with someone directly to do that. So that was an important event to show that picture, which had been in, you know, my family for decades, and I knew that's what it was that inspired Stang, but I had no way of showing to anybody unless they came and met me in Toronto. So thanks to 8-Bit, it was put on the web, and then we used that for this website.
Now, Chad, you remember?
Interesting.
Do you remember, Chad? Yeah. You ever heard stories about after World War II, islands in the South Pacific, where they basically American planes would drop these packages of food, and these natives who they weren't in touch at all with this world. You know, they just were isolated to that island. They would think that those were gods, and so they would make these airplanes out of straw to kind of worship these gods.
And yeah, they were called cargo cults. They were called called cargo cults.
Interesting.
That
is
what the church, and that is what the Church of the Subgenius was and is. That's what we were doing in college, is we were part of this cargo cult. But see, the pilot has landed, and you're talking to him, my friend. This is Bob Dobbs. He's the real deal.
I came back to the island. I came back to the island where I dropped the cargo, the swag off. This swag cult here, and came back right now, or always been back for many years, to talk to the cargo cult victims.
Now,
and of course, the victims, there's so much dogma from the victims that they're in complete denial that they could have ever misunderstood so much what was really happening. And that's why we're in such a better space now. Do you hear what I'm saying, Chad? Chad, is that blown your mind blown?
It's on its way. if not already, too late.
It's being delivered. It's being delivered to the launch pad. Yeah, no, that's a good, you know, the metaphor that they say if Jesus came back, Christians would reject him. Well, that's an early version of me. I come back, and the cargo cult has no understanding of what the cargo means that I left.
They wouldn't even recognize if it was right in their face, you know.
That's right.
Exactly.
So I end up in the ghettos of Portland, Oregon, you know, talking on the internet with one guy who happens to have a reasonably open mind and actually was kicked out of the Church of Jesus. It's the only guy who actually hang out with, quote, Bob Jesus, you know.
You know, and that's credentials right there, being actually kicked out, because he must have too much slack, if that's possible.
Right. Yeah, he did. I mean, he's hated. Kurt is hated. He's not respected at all, and yet he still posts today, hey, guys, come on over and play. You know, he's still open for dialogue.
Chad, if you're still on the computer, just go to Alt Slack and type my name in there and see what comes up.
Let me take a look.
They treated me like with such fear, and they fear me. I'm feared there.
That's good. Fear is power, you know. Now, what did you want me to type in here?
Just type in my name.
Kurt Weller in Searches Group. What do you do? You have a name on there, Chad?
No, I don't. I'm under top down still.
Yeah, we're like
okay,
pre-internet, so I don't think Chad ever was on part of it.
Okay, so I've put in Kurt Weller, and then I sort by date, and the first one is April 8th. It says, when Modeback and Lobotomy listened to that latest Kurt Weller interview with Dean, where they talk about us for hours, it probably doubled that episode's number of downloads.
Now, Kurt, I have to say, Kurt's a true subgenius among us.
That's right.
I'm like the anti-Philo, you know? I mean, if you're going to, like, have your... I guess I'd be the anti-Stang.
Yes.
Because, you know, Bob is like... Bob is the original... Bob's the American guy who was flying over in an island, and he dropped down some shit.
Some swag.
Yeah. So I'm the guy talking to the pilot. The entire subgenius community, you know, in the jungle metaphor, chased this poor guy out with spears and bows and arrows. But I'm the guy, I'm the native who kind of like, you know, was hanging back and saw Bob running this way, and I said, come over here.
you're Martin Sheen talking to Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now.
Exactly.
with all the natives all stoned out, you know, around the area and just sort of whacked out. And there's me sitting there going, the horror, the horror, the horror. And Kurt's there trying to figure out how to kill me.
Not quite sure how Dennis Hopper would fit in there.
Yeah, you'd be Chad, you're Dennis Hopper. In this case, right now, you're the Dennis Hopper character. So let me read. Here's Ivan Stang. He says, in talking about Kurt, he says, if you count the books and the other subgenius radio shows besides our Slack and the various YouTube accounts that specialize in subgenius and all the various forums and websites, I'm sure it's way more than 10,000 times Dean's output. And they call me Bob Dean. From what I can tell, Dean has a regular audience of roughly 20 people tops, and half of those are probably kook watchers. His website forum has about 5 active people at any given time, only a couple of them capable of forming complete sentences without making ludicrous grammatical mistakes. For example, Kurt Weller's dispersions. So he makes fun of Kurt.
I haven't heard this yet. This is good.
Yeah, this was posted April 7th. He then goes, just as one easy-to-check example, my little... Now, here's this whole... This is the subgenius leader thinking that having a lot of people, you know, come to your site is a sign of success. That's very non-subgenius. The subgenius would want to have nobody coming to their site. See, so he uses mainstream thinking to justify his position. Whereas actually, I am the real subgenius because I have two people coming to my site. That's good.
The subgenius philosophy, from what I can understand, is exactly opposite of the popular notion.
That's what they're trying to be.
Yeah.
They're trying to be not mainstream. But here is Stang citing mainstream value systems to declare that we are not subgenius and he is. So he says, when Modemack, who's one of the main guys, rational guys, of, you know, henchmen for Stang, and Lobotomy, another guy, when Modemack and Lobotomy listen to that latest Kurt Weller interview with Dean, where they talk about us for hours, it probably doubled that episode's number of downloads. So, in other words,
Bob, I can say that's not actually true because we get about 47 downloads per show so far.
That's right.
So
it
didn't double that episode. So they can go fuck themselves.
That's right. So he brags about their big numbers. He says, go figure. One look at the numbers on a typical Bob Dean post on 5bobbies.com gives you a pretty good idea of how many people breathlessly await his latest proclamations. Then he says, but who cares? There's no way anybody's going to confuse us with him now that he's so frantic over this unbelievably corny, retarded ion trans medium crap. He is welcome to all the audience he wants for that stuff. I would be horrified if the kind of people who fall for that were also into the church subgenius. Christ, Doc Martian is bad enough. So there he is. And so I respond by just doing my standard response. Exactly. I do the Beavis and Butthead. That's my response.
A great chapter in American history right there.
Yes, yeah. And then Chain Smirker from Australia comes in and says, addressing me and Kurt, if you two would just pretend to put up with him for a month, I might be able to get that $50,000. I'll shoot you all $10,000 each. See, this smirker guy claims I owe him $50,000.
For what?
It's a little far.
What do you owe him for, Bob?
I don't know. He just claimed that I owed him $50,000. And he's been, so I send him a couple of postcards with the old Bob's Me Ecology album on it. You know, real souvenir collector's items. I said, here's $100,000 with these two copies, and he didn't accept that. He actually came on one of our tailgates after a cash flow show recently and came in, and he started saying, you owe me $50,000, and all the regulars there of the Ion world didn't know who this guy was, and they thought I owed this guy, and they thought it was a scandal. And I explained, no, just listen to the guy. And he actually did sound insane. You know, you can tell in the voice. The guy fucking was insane. He was a real madman. And he actually is a regular on the alt Slack. His name is Chain Smirker. So I respond to these guys, and I go, not so interesting. Not so interesting, Doug. You're still stalking me. But for the record, our Wednesday show on Cashflow now is registering weekly an average of 10.9 million listeners. And our Tuesday evening show, Melody's Titanium, which is broadcast entirely within the realm of ESP, in other words, you can't even hear it, now has at least 100,000 listeners every week, many from parallel worlds.
We need some of them to call.
Now, what did we do today on the 24th cash flow with the authentic J.R. Bob Dobbs? I put in brackets, actually J.R. Ionic Dobbs, because if you listen to Ion, that is the closest you're going to get to what you imagine J.R. Bob sounds like. I mean, Kurt has heard him. That is J.R. Bob Dobbs' voice, right there with the southern twang. And then so I said, with the authentic J.R. Ionic Dobbs, Dr. Carol Dean and myself, we gave to the world the formula for making cold fusion. Yep, that's right. I stand by my words.
That's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, just look at Purple's post when you go on there.
Now, what do you think, Chad?
But listen to this, Chad. They are so wrapped up about me, they have two other people posting as Purple, and they've actually rigged it so that it looks like it's from my email address. They actually got a deal with Stang. He let them go in there. He says, okay, you, or with the website, whatever, you can post with Bob's email so that everybody thinks it's Bob's posting, and they make ridiculous statements by me as if I'm posting. And if you just did a surface examining of it, you'd think that was me posting one thought, and then I post a totally contradictory thought in the next post. They go through all this effort to discourage anybody taking anything I say with any interest.
So
now, that is extraordinary.
The actual J.R. Bob Dobbs.
That's right. And so you will notice several purples on their posting. I mean, it's quite a compliment. Nobody else has their own nom de clature, nom de plume being satirized and played off of. I am the main reason for alt slack.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I do have a question. Who exactly is Connie? I hear about Bob and Connie Dobbs.
It's based on my wife, Carolyn Dean, whose original name, she grew up in Paris, is Constance. She was named Constance, and that became Connie. And then she married me in 1966. We've been together 44 years, married for 40 years. The thing is that she was actually Connie Dobbs, and we did intelligent work, and we did a lot of bad stuff. That was acceptable, and, you know, we had security clearance. And then in the late 70s, we decided to sort of get out of the Secret Council 10 intelligence work we were doing. We called it solar government intelligence work, not world government, solar government, which is what people know as Echelon today, the monitoring of telecommunications around the world. That's the
you're talking to the guy who's behind, like, the Kennedy and the MLK assassinations.
The making of AIDS. I'll tell you how AIDS was made and how we did it, why we did it. But just to finish the thing about, so Carolyn went to, so Connie took on the name Carolyn Dean based on Garrett Dean, who was a very charismatic guy we knew in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia in Canada. Garrett Dean, she took on his last name, dropped the E, and so Carolyn Dean is now a well-known worldwide popular doctor, and no one knows, unless they go on to Slack or other obscure places, and find out that her real name is Connie Dobbs. So Connie Dobbs is Dr. Carolyn Dean, and I shout this all over the world. And she used to be on The View. Right when she was on The View with Barbara Walters and everybody, she's a regular from 99 to 2002, I'm there telling everybody on Slack, there's Connie Dobbs. Anybody at the staff, Barbara Walters' staff, could have gone on there and said, wait a minute, Carolyn, your husband says you're Connie Dobbs. It never happened. They never were either protected from that, or they're just not in the same world. But I've always been honest. Carolyn's been honest about this.
She must have had a lot of slack too to be married for so long.
Carolyn is Ion, which is probably the biggest event in human history, is Ion coming through because it's the emptying of the guff and a whole bunch of amazing stuff. I won't distract you from. You might want to listen to the last couple of shows in the archives, or I could send you go to my timeline. Listen to what me and Kurt have been talking about the last four shows. It's pretty interesting. But Ion says that we put up with Bob, but we miss Carolyn. When they went away this weekend, the vehicle, JW, so he was away for a couple of days, and he reported to a client we just had. That's why I couldn't do Kurt earlier. We had a client earlier. And Ion said, you know, we put up with Bob, but we missed Carolyn. Carolyn is the most loved thing from the non-physical plane. I mean, she is pretty awesome. And on a secular level, she's awesome. As many people said, how the hell she put up with you for 40 years?
That is, you must have incredible amounts of slack. And I got to say, I have an ex-wife that did not have, she had zero slack. So, yeah.
So did Kurt.
That's usually the case. Yeah.
Which, yeah, slack is an essential part of any great marriage. So you have to have slack to put up with each other and to be able to make common sense and dollars and cents. So
yeah, I will send you, Chad. I got the broadcast on June 9th. We have a regular weekly radio show. And I went on there, and I made the most incredible statement a husband could make. I bragged about our relationship. I said, we are the most powerful couple on the planet. We are the happiest couple that ever lived on the planet. And I go on and on. And then I add that we are also the silliest couple that ever lived. And so I make this incredible statement. And Carolyn, they ask Carolyn, you know, what did she say about this? And she says, I have no problem recommending anybody, any woman, to be married to Bob.
That's a bold statement there.
Yeah. So did you, what would you say? It's interesting. Does the male require more slack in the woman than the woman requires in the man? This is, you know, the sexes are different. They were before we had four bodies, but you know, just take that traditional thing. It's like the men require slack more. You see, most marriages fall apart because the woman hasn't got slack from the man's point of view.
Exactly. Most men are typically predisposed for slack.
Yes.
And you know, the women are generally a little too uptight and just don't have that slack.
They're uptight because they traditionally are the thing that holds the society together. McLuhan used to say that the Godfather series was misnamed. It should have been called the Godmother, because the real power in the mafia is the mother. And it's always been a matriarchy, you know, behind the scenes for society. The women have a sense of responsibility.
Like the Sopranos.
Yeah.
Behind every great man, there's a great woman.
Right. And they see the women, because they give birth, they actually give birth to the baby, they have a little bit more attachment to making sure the kid survives than the male does. So you're right. The men have a little more detachment and carefree irresponsibility going, naturally.
But that's important for perpetuation slack, though.
Yeah. I like what Ion says. Here, Ion says that a woman teams up with a guy to change the man. A man teams up with a woman.
Well.
Right. And the man teams up with a woman and hopes the woman never changes. So you got the woman wants to change the guy, and he can't change. And the man wants the woman to not change, but you can't stop that because they're going to age. So it's an impossible situation if you don't recognize that dialectic.
It is. It is. That's one of the most profound things I've heard in quite a long time.
It's simple and it's true.
That is very, very true. That's a great just observation right there.
Yeah. I'm glad you appreciate that, Chad. You're not a sub-genius. You're a sub-dini.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, on the old Slack world, they have decided... When people like Kurt and them show up, they say, you work with Bob Dean. That's what they call me. So you're a Deany. So then I said, yeah, we're sub-Deanies versus sub-Genies. See, sub-Genies, they call them sub-Genies. And then you know what? Now, this was incredible. I happened to be listening to an old archive broadcast by Stang from the summer of 1982. They had their first or second divival in Chicago. Even Sherman Skolnick attended that. And so they had a tape of it. It's one of the first tape offerings they gave back in the 80s. And you listen to that tape. At one point, they're all sitting around in the dressing room after this public divival in Chicago. And one guy says, you know what, there's the sub-genies, and then there's the sub-deanies. He says that in 1982. I don't know why he says that, but it's right there embedded. 20 years before the sub-deanies showed up.
Fascinating. So it was embedded. It was already there.
I can do it right now. I posted that. Usually I can put it in Subdini's 1982, and it'll come up in the Alt Slack archive. Okay, so Subdini's. I mean, you're on there. You could do it. Just write in Subdini's.
It is fascinating how long this has been around, and that more people haven't caught on. And it's
a very successful fringe phenomenon. The churches are sub-genius as a business. It's very successful. It didn't make millions, but
Bob,
it kept itself going.
Now, isn't Bob's philosophy? I mean, from what I've read and seen, it's all about making common sense and dollars and cents. So, actually, it goes against like the hippie philosophy of money is bad. Money is actually good. It helps you achieve more slack.
Everything that the sub-genies say is expressed by Ion. I've written many years ago that the church sub-genius is my John the Baptist. If you want to put some spiritual charisma on me, and I did bring forth Ion, albeit accidentally, but it did happen, and Carol and I did this. But if you wanted to say, well, where did this come from? I see Zappa and other things, especially the Church of Genius, as John the Baptist. They prefigure this whole Ionic phenomenon, if you go into the details. One of the main slogans of ION is relax and allow. Now, that's what subgeniuses do. They try to relax and allow.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it also, I think the band Devo, Kurt knows this well, they have a great theory of de-evolution. Maybe I don't have this right, but I think the human race is de-evolving. We're with all of our gizmos and technology and everything, people are becoming complacent, not willing to think. And, I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
Okay, now here's the – I am very familiar with – and let me tell you, I first experienced Devo in November 1977 in Matt Groening, the creator of Simpsons, in Matt Groening's apartment in L.A. in November 77. Okay, when did they start? 75, 76, 77? That's when they started, right?
Early 70s, yeah, 72, 73, yeah.
Right. So
hey,
by
are you guys going to be on the air for a little while longer?
Yep.
I got to take a little break here, but I'll call back in just a little bit. I got attend to something here.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Let's go back shortly. Okay, we look forward to it.
See you guys.
And I found the thing. I'm pretty sure I found it, Kurt. So we can go back on another topic. Rather than doing this, we'll get back to the subgenius with Chad when he comes back. Let's go. What were we talking about?
Oh, well, we were talking about I think it was the president.
We covered
that when Chad.
He did that. We were talking about Lost, the TV shows, and I don't know if we finished the TV about There's No Here Now. Okay, let's just go to a totally different topic. Bring up something we haven't talked about that you're interested in.
Something we haven't talked? Wow. I was just going to ask you about this, and now I'm slipping. I asked you a question in the original interview about video games. I've been playing this new one called Red Dead Redemption, which is a Western, and it's multiplayer, so you can get your friends on there and talk pretty much like what we're talking right now while you're playing the game.
Right.
What do you make of that? What is that like? What environment is that replicating? Or is that part of the Android meme? Or
yeah, but look, don't just use the label. You examine what the experience is made up of. You know, when you're reading a book, you say, okay, here's this white pages and the lines are linear. What does that mean? You look at the material substance of the medium. So what is happening when you're doing online? It's on your computer. And you're hooked up to various other computers and sharing the same game space.
Yeah, well, it's a PlayStation, so you're actually playing it on your home TV.
Oh, okay.
You watch. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you're doing it on TV, but it's a chip landscape, and you can talk to each other while playing with the imagery.
Right.
You don't mean typing messages to each other. You mean verbally hear each other?
Yeah, you verbally talk to each other while you're riding around on a horseback.
Okay, well, that's cool because the last game I saw, which was Sleepers in Toronto, he was heavy into the game world, and they had to type comments. This is about 6 years ago. They typed comments, you know what I mean? But you're saying you actually, like speech recognition, you can talk and people can hear. That's easier.
Yeah, because
okay.
You wear a little headset. You wear a headset like an operator, and then while you're playing, you're talking to your friends.
Okay, so you got your chip body. There's no mistaking the fact you're all in a simultaneous place. And because you're on your TV version, you're not on the computer where you could drop off and go to other sites, you know, scan or whatever it is, surf. You're locked in one little arena. On the TV screen. Okay, so that is digitally makes it, the digital qualities is it's a very high definition color, lots of movement, fast movement, so all the qualities of a TV screen in hyper mode. But the actual talking to each other, that brings back chemical body human scale. That's like you're walking around downtown with your friends, but you're looking at this. You're looking at your little side, like a side movie is the chip landscape with the game on it. So it's actually increasingly more, it's way more powerful than the gaming I saw 6 years ago where the guy was typing messages while shooting at each other. Okay, they were typing back and forth. That's still detached. You're still in the chip body space. But you're actually, if you're talking, you're beginning to feel like you're standing on the ground and interacting with the person physically right beside you, like your chemical body life. So that's a new factor. And that's predicted in my chart in the sense that as the chip landscape shrinks, your physical body becomes bigger. And that's what you happen. That's
oh,
what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in the 30s and 40s with a big radio environment, you're just a little body inside this booming echo chamber. But as this media shrinks, as you're doing in your game, and you can talk immediately to someone, that's different from 5 years ago where the media shrunk and you could play your little chip game wherever you wanted to, but you still had to type. You did not have the chemical body direct access through talking. Now you can. I mean, that's revolutionary. That's a major human scale effect. That makes the environment even tinier and less imposing if you can talk with someone while you're engaging with the chip landscape. That's a major metaphysical effect.
Yes, yes.
See,
all
that's
right,
when
you know
the media landscape's been shrinking for 10 years. It shrunk so much 2 years ago that and the sense of being bigger than the media is what the human body started to feel, and so the media environment shrunk so much it disappeared, and they call that the crash of Wall Street, the crash of the global economy. The digital landscape shrunk. It disappeared. And now you got the people walking around, instant access with everybody, as if they're all in the public square together in Washington Square Park. That's what it's like when you walk around and you can talk to somebody. You know, they have... About a year or two ago, they had those little cameras you could talk in, and they could show people where they are.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's another thing. Each PlayStation comes with this thing called PlayStation Home, and that's basically you create a character who looks like you or how you want to look, and then you warp to this – It's like a plaza. It's like a mall, where all the other characters, all the other people who own PlayStations, can kind of hang out and chat.
Right, verbally chat.
Last time I went on, it was text. But now that I have my mic, I don't know. I'm assuming I'd be able to use the mic.
Right, and you have used the mic.
Yeah, with the other one.
Okay, so you see, here's the thing. When McLuhan said the medium is the message, the medium is the previous technological setup. The medium is the past development. So when TV came in the 50s, its effects were on radio, movies, bulldozers, cars, and farms and all that back in the 20s. I mean, back in the 50s when TV came in. So the effect of this new gaming situation with your little headset, you don't look at what it's doing to you. You look at what it's doing to previous media setups and the attitudes that came from them. You have people inside huge media environments in the 80s and 90s, and then now it's flipped into you're bigger than the media. That upsets the whole ideas that set up the 70s and 80s and 90s. That's where the effects are. And the effect was to collapse any sense of cohesion in that formerly huge environment.
Yeah,
that explains the collapse of the economy. See, why would the economy collapse? You know, everybody's going along having a great time, and all of a sudden they say, oh, they decide we're poor, and everybody has to be laid off. And it's even getting worse. It's carrying on.
Right.
Why would people think that's happening? There's no reason. You didn't start thinking, oh, maybe we should stop this. Maybe everybody's too wealthy. You didn't think that.
I didn't think that. No.
And now you're forced to think of. Yeah, we actually shouldn't use you. Not a good example of any thinking. In a cliche sense. Oh, no, I covered I saved your ass. I said in the cliche sense.
Yeah, I know you're just pandering to the alt slack types anyway, so they can continue to think that you and I have a sadomasochistic relationship.
Yeah, I'm always working all the levels. That's right. We got many audiences here because they could be future audiences too.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's why I always announce when something is being revealed here for the first time.
Well, Chad's a pleasant subgenius. You know, he's sane. I was hoping a mad dog would come on. All that I, you know, preambled before we started talking to Chad about how I'm a reasonable person. I didn't have to say that to Chad. Now that I talked to him, but I figured if he was an insane guy, might give him a little preamble. But we still haven't heard the great encounter between me and some mainstream subgenius.
I keep trying to make it happen.
I know.
So we can only hope that they will gird their loins and step into the arena.
Okay, I don't know if Chad's going to come back on, but I want to read you what happened in 1982. I found the post. I go.
Okay, and then after that, I've probably got about 10 more minutes.
Oh yeah, he may not come back.
Right. So we got about 10 more minutes. So you want to go? You're going to tell me about this thing from 1982.
Yeah. Why do we only have 10 minutes? It's only 4:30. Can't we go to 5? Don't we go 2 hours?
Well, the show, the streaming show, actually ended like an 30 minutes ago. It ended at 7 my time, and I'm afraid we're going to get cut off. So I kind of put that there as a warning that we might get
cut off
again.
Okay, I got you. Don't we get 2 hours? We only get an hour.
No, they only give me an hour unless I.
Is this being taped?
Streaming.
Is this extra part being taped?
Right now I'm running two different taping programs, so I'm hoping that those will pick it up.
Okay, I wrote when someone said, "Why do you call them subdinis?" And I go, "Because Doug and all, meaning staying in them, came up with it almost 30 years ago. In brackets, 2 years before I intervened on October 1st, 1984 on CKLN. On Subgenius Hour Slack number 1076, you hear an excerpt from the 1982 World Subgenius Convention in Chicago. On it, you hear the following at about 52 minutes into the hour. Quote, somebody's saying, sounds like a Tylenol party. And that in 82 was when the Tylenol scare happened. So it's on their mind.
Right.
And let's just check something here. Okay. Somebody goes, sounds like a Tylenol party. I don't want no Arnold Palmer. I don't want no Yakutizma. I don't want no Subdinis. So I point that out at the 52-minute mark. Then I say just over a minute later, so, you know, at the 53-minute mark, someone says, they say he's a golfer with rotten oranges, Subgenies. Subdinis, right? Subdinis are genius.
Weird.
Whereas that's right there in 1982. I think it's Hypercleat says that. It's in his voice. Sounds like a Tylenol party. I don't want no Arnold Palmer. I don't want no Yakutizma. I don't want no Subdinis. Who knows why they said Subdinis? But it just shows you my influence in retrospect. And then a minute later, they say he's a golfer with rotten oranges. Subgenies, Subdinis, right? Subdinis are genius. And, you know, Subgenies are subgenius. So it's a put down to say we're a genius. Now, Ion talks about how people from the future plant pharaohs and dummies in the Giza plateau there where the pyramids are from the future so that we now can find them. Discover them now. They found more pharaohs than were in history, in recorded history. They just keep being deposited there from the future. And so the anthropologists
I noticed that they discovered more pharaohs recently.
Right, and it's more than historic. That's because the people from the future, Ion explained, placed them in the past so that we now can find them to validate this whole history thing and also to get confused by it. So it looks like that I, in the future, planted this Subdini comment back in 82 so that now on your show and whenever else I've brought it up, I can say, look, I was part of the past because, and they don't know it, but the future planted it back there so I could use it and exploit it now.
That's crazy, Bob.
I know. And so when I post this, someone says, well, Pisces, she's one of the main people. She says, ooh, that's really creepy, stalky. They claim me to be stalking them. And I say, no, it's called Xenocrony, the beginning of the stalking of me by the android meme, which y'all are a very tiny subset of. So they won't deal with this actual interesting synchronicity that goes on.
No, they don't. Is it over their heads?
Yep. I think it is. So, no problem.
Okay,
we don't know if we're going to get cut off. So what's another interesting... I don't think Chad's going to make it back in time. So what... if you want me to send him some stuff, give me his email, offline, and bring him up to date.
I don't even think I have his email, but I'll get in contact with him. Yeah, it was kind of cool because I haven't talked to the guy, like I said, in such a long time, so I figured he'd be an impartial observer to this.
Oh, you invited him to listen today?
I've invited him to listen since I saw him back in Michigan.
And how did you encounter him? Did you make a point of finding him in Michigan?
It was another friend of a mutual friend happened to mention Chad, and I said, oh, is he still in town? And he said, yeah, and so that's how we met again.
Where did you meet?
Just at a bar.
So you've called him up and arranged it?
Called him up and arranged what?
The meeting in the bar.
Yeah. Well, our friend did. Our friend arranged it.
Okay, so when you saw him, did he look much different?
No, not at all.
Did he think you looked different?
I didn't ask him, but I do look a lot different.
Okay, so he might have been surprised. If he comes back on, we'll ask him how different you did look. So did you pick it up? Was he the kind of friend where you could just feel like no time had passed?
Pretty much, we were roommates, and so I hadn't seen him since we lived together, and that was back in 94 or
Would you
five.
Have shared Bosmia Ecology with him?
That was right about the time I started listening to it, but I don't know if he ever heard a copy of it or not, come to mention.
Right,
it.
Yeah. So what did
so
you guys...
I don't think he was familiar with your role in the whole church.
Right.
And that's why he'd be an interesting choice because, he's still a staying sub-genius.
Okay, so...
Was,
go ahead.
Oh, no, which was why I thought it was funny because then I got to... I had the bragging rights about the cease and desist, which you got a kick out of.
Right. Yeah, no, for the cognoscenti, that's quite a badge to wear. I mean, that's really hip to have been kicked out of the church that accepts everybody.
Yeah, I mean, has anybody else been kicked out? I don't know.
Me.
Were you,
but, you know,
were you
I,
ever a
I never was a
though?
Member, really. I guess I never was right. a member, so, yeah, I guess I'm not kicked out. I just never was. I never was allowed in.
Yeah, you're not accepted.
Yeah, and I certainly didn't require to be allowed in or to have acceptance. That was not of any interest. The point is that Stang was shocked when that album came out. He couldn't believe it. He used to say in interviews, it's in some Toronto Globe Mail interview back then, he said, we've had people claim they were Bobby or something, but we never thought someone would make that claim and then run with it. And keep doing it. That shocked them.
Well,
anyway,
okay.
I don't want to dwell too much on this, but go ahead. What was you were going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, like, I doesn't look like Chad's going to call back, and we should probably just wrap it up before they make us wrap it up, because we rarely seem to get a choice as to when the show actually ends.
Okay, well,
so,
I just felt there was
what happened today.
Yeah, no, it was good.
Did you feel like there was some unfinished business?
Yeah, there's something, I don't know what it is. The Queen is, I'll give you an exclusive. The Queen is came over to Canada, doesn't come over very much, and gave a speech, went down to New York City, checked out her deposit at 121 Depot Street. It was screwed up, so she went back to Canada, had to perform in Toronto, and now is back in New York City visiting Ground Zero and going to make an address at the United Nations as the Queen of England. And she has not addressed the United Nations in 50 years. And so she had to come back because they found out that the gold that she thought she had in Depot Street is not there.
Oh. And
that's going to affect your economy extremely. So she's going to go to the UN and say tomorrow, you fuckers ain't going to get nothing unless you give me my money back, my gold back. It'll come out in the form, we need more funding here at the United Nations. It should be a viable institution, all this stuff. But it'll be a veiled threat that if you fuckers don't replenish what I had here at 121 Depot Street, there's going to be hell to pay.
I didn't realize she had gold spread all over the place.
Oh, yeah. She's one of the most wealthy people in the world. And she, remember, she's the head of a religion. She's the Pope of Anglicanism. Okay? She's the head of a religion. Do you ever think of that? Do you ever think of her as the head of a religion? You don't, do you?
No, I just always thought of her. I've always just thought of the Queen of England as being just the kind of nostalgia piece.
No, she is the head of the Protestant religion, Anglican, High Anglican, I don't know what branch. Anyway, she's the head. She started it. Her Tudor family started it. Okay, so she is the head of a religion, and she's actually up till this week, economically viable, whereas the Vatican isn't. The Vatican's bankrupt. They're selling off their sacred books.
Oh, I didn't realize that either. I didn't even realize that.
I know, great. There's so much we could point out you don't realize, but we'll let you down slowly.
What I don't know could fill a book.
Well, probably could fill the Library of Congress, the Smithsonian, all those.
What are you busting my? What are you busting my balls for, man? Come
no,
on.
No, no. I'm not busting your balls. See,
I know.
There you are reacting. You're identifying with my words. We're just trying to make entertaining radio. Okay, so you don't take it personally.
Hey, and I want to thank you. I know, I'm not taking it personally, Bob. I'm fucking with you. But
we're both fucking with each other. We're lousy kids.
Yeah.
We fuck with each other and get our lines mixed up and interrupt the joke, say, oh, I didn't mean that personally. That's funny. Imagine Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis interrupting each other in a routine and say, oh, I didn't mean that personally. What were you going to say?
Bob Dean Martin.
Yeah, Wyndham Lewis. Bob Dean Martin, Wyndham Lewis. Jerry Lewis. Bob Dean Martin Lewis. Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, Wyndham Lewis. Yeah. It works, Craig. It works, Craig. I don't know who I'm talking to. Craig.
Yeah,
is this Craig?
Craig, Kurt. Douchebag, cunt weller, whatever you want to call me.
How's that for a comedy duo? I start mixing up the names. Imagine Dean Martin calling Jerry Billy.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so I think you were trying to say something. You had a thought there.
I like to thank you because I have been struggling with what to call this, because whenever I would call it a radio show, it that's not true because it's not a radio show.
I mean, it isn't.
Greg and I were calling it Internet Talk.
Okay.
And I like you just threw out the name there when Chad was on the line, Chip Radio.
Yeah.
Which I like.
Chip Radio, very good. Chip Chip. Chip Radio.
So I'm gonna use that for this show.
Yeah, Chip Radio. Say it's the world's only Chip Radio. Because we named it. We named it.
Yeah.
It's ours.
The thing is, I've been having a lot of technical problems with the show. I got your email. I'm trying to get to the bottom of that. We missed that second hour, and I'm not sure if I can get it back.
Oh, yeah.
And so what I'm doing is I'm taking all the episodes, and, like, if there's partial pieces like that, I'm putting them together into the episode it belongs to be in. Because it's a mess, and
yeah.
I feel bad for your archivist because it's all over the place. So if what I wanted to say is that if any of the episodes, there's a couple right now that aren't up, but I do have them, and I'm going to put them back up as soon as I get them fixed. Does that make sense?
Great.
Yeah. So it just won't be as distracting and confusing. I like it to be orderly.
Right, some of the Dobbstown fans, they like the Kurt Weller Dobbs dialogues the best. They like you. They like your casual, I don't know, good old boy kind of just hanging out. What it brings out of me.
Clubhouse Radio, yeah. I appreciate, I feel like it's a different show from the other shows I've heard. My favorite stuff of you was always when you'd call into Greg. And so I was aiming for something like that. That's funny shit, and I really enjoy the banter, and your break talking, the way you kind of like.
With Greg and Daniel.
You're like the jazz of spoken word, man. You can riff. Nobody can beat you. You're like,
and then if you pick it apart, it actually makes profound sense.
Totally, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's an update to listeners, especially five by. I mean, I'm guessing that's where our listeners are coming from.
Yeah.
I get a number of downloads, just how many downloads I've had. And so I've always assumed, it's coming from the five body guy.
Yeah, five bobbies. The five bobbies.
Is that what they're calling us now?
That's what Stang calls it, the fivebobbies.com.
Wow, okay.
But what I was going to say was you're like a chip off the old block. It's chip off the old block radio, chip radio, but it's off the old block. It's back home. It's going back to Michigan to meet Chad, to see Chad in the bar. That's what this is. Let's go back to Bob. Bob and Kurt, they go way back through the audio landscape.
Yeah, really.
Way
and
back.
That's kind of what the show is. It's like we're all meeting at the bar.
Yeah,
it's
human scale.
It's cheers. I'm Ted Danson, and you are
I never saw the show. I can't help you. You're on your own here.
Maybe you're the mailman. Nobody ever believed him. He was a smart guy. He knew a lot of trivial facts. He kind of half sounded like a Canadian guy trying to do a Boston accent to me.
Good. I like that. Yeah, because one of the characters, the two twins, are Shem and Sean. Sean is a postman in Finnegan's Wake.
Ah, yep, see?
Yeah. No, it works. And remember, Finney's Way takes place at a bar, an Irish pub. So actually, you hit on something. And cheers is like a fatty statement. Cheers is a fatty communion. So it's a lot of Bob stuff in that show. What else happened in that show? What did the characters do? Yeah.
Sam Malone, the guy who owned the bar, was an ex-baseball player who who ruined his career through being an alcoholic, and so he ran a bar, but he was sober.
Okay. He didn't drink.
So he didn't drink, no. And so that was the premise of the show, was that this guy's like, you know, he feels comfortable there. You know, everybody knows his name. There's a bunch of regulars. And, you know, they just kind of come in. Sometimes they get into, like, the morality tale of the 80s, you know, sitcom.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you remember, like, the Different Strokes stuff with Gary
no.
Coleman.
I mean, I know of it.
But... It, you know, it was basically 22-minute morality tales for kids. You know, like, in one episode, he'd find some alcohol and he'd drink it, and it would tell you, like, the kind of troubles that would cause.
That's 22 minutes, you said?
Yeah, yeah. The show would be about 22 minutes without commercials.
Okay, who else was on there? What's another character?
On Cheers?
Yeah.
Well, you had Woody, who was Sam Malone's assistant, who was played by Woody Harrelson. And
right.
before him, there was a guy named Coach, who was an older version of Woody. They were both kind of dim bulbs, you know, characters. Kind of
Woody,
kind of
Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson knows about Ion. He lives here in Hawaii, and he's aware of the show, and he told Clint Eastwood about it. And Clint Eastwood
really?
Started making it. Yeah. Woody Harrelson, Ion has picked up a lot about him. But here's another thing. You got the pub in Finney's Wake, HCE, which is, stands for Humphrey Chimpton Earwicker. He owns the pub. He's a guy that doesn't drink too much. So you got that aspect in the Cheers. And then you have his assistant, who's a janitor, I can't remember the name, Joe the janitor or something, old Joe or something. That's your Woody Harrelson and the other character. And then you have that woman who's been, she gets gains weight now a lot or something. You know, who's the main?
Oh yeah,
woman
it was originally Shelley Long, and then Shelley Long, and then she was taken over by Kirstie Alley.
Yeah. Now, what did she do? What was her story?
She owned the bar, basically, or a company owned the bar, the hotel that the bar was in, and so she kind of had to oversee Sam.
And Sam is a baseball player.
Ted Danson, yeah, and Shelley Long was a waitress.
Okay, well, that fits. See, there's, you've got, she'd be Humphrey Chipton's Earwicker's wife, Anne Olivia Plurabelle, not married in this case, but she was an important person in the bar, the woman. And then you had her assistant, forget her name, that would be Shelley Long, or whatever you said, Sally Long,
right,
Shelley Long.
Right.
So it's a real Finney's Wake scenario there.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way, but now that, yeah, I mean, all those archetypes are there.
Yeah, now who would be, if you have, since they have twin and a daughter, who would be, they wouldn't be that young, but who would be the younger kids of the clients? Who would be the people come in and drink that were regulars?
Who would their kids be? What do you mean by that?
Okay. Yeah, Humphrey Chimpton Earwicker and Anne Olivia Plurable have a twin sons and a daughter. Now, to make this Cheers fit, there has to be clients, customers who come in who are kind of not as old as the baseball player. Or Kirstie Alley.
I see. I'm not sure. I'll have to do some research.
There were no regular customers? There was no regular customers.
No. There was like George Wendt. There was the mailman. There was the...
Okay. You got George. Now, if Sean is the mailman in Finney's Wake, that would be the mailman in Cheers. So George would have to be the opposite of the mailman, more the underground criminal artist character. Is that what George is? Is he a shady character?
George, no, he's more of a... Harry Anderson played the shady character that would come around once in a while.
Okay,
George Wendt played the... he was kind of the company man.
Okay, so that would be... That would be just the average citizen. That would be in the pub. That the average citizen in the pub in Finnegan's Wake. They were actually called
right.
the 12. There was 12 of them.
and they were the average citizen. So this George guy would be the average citizen, and you have this shady guy coming around. He'd be the brother of the mailman. It works perfect. Now, is anybody else?
That I'd have to research, because it has been a while since I saw it, and that's about all I can remember.
Okay.
But,
very interesting. Updating.
I can look into that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did want. We got about 6 minutes left, and that'll give us our 2 hour. Greg and I are going to do another show in the Outer Channel, and he's like researching Gary Coleman. And I was wondering, is Gary Coleman another one of those people like Michael Jackson?
I don't know. Didn't he just die? Or I just
yeah.
saw him.
Yeah, he just died.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I haven't talked to Ian about it.
Okay.
So,
when is the and let's do a plug because I want to call in. When is the Cash Flow show?
It is Wednesdays at 11 a.m. your time.
Is there a number?
I don't have the number.
But it would be on the website.
Yeah, achieveradio.com. I know what number I call in to be on there. I have my behind the scenes number, but I don't know what the public calls in.
Because I was thinking about calling in, and you'll vouch for me if I call in.
Oh yeah, I'll give you a resume and all that you've done and how you've even had Ion on your show.
Okay, good. So, yeah, Ion remember me too. And is Ion on every week then on Cash Flow?
Yes, it all revolves around Ion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, Ion is the main thing we bounce off of for 3 hours every Wednesday.
Okay.
So remember,
cool.
It's 11 till 2. 11 till 2. You've got 3 hours to call in.
Okay. I'm going to try to do that this week.
So what is happening in – I'm just trying to get into another kind of topic in the final minutes. What's happening in your other part of your life? Or what is there of concern? Of not concern?
You know, right now I'm just trying to, like, kind of – exists and just kind of I'm on a holding pattern while I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing, and by doing, you know, basically I'm just working my job and not spending any money on anything and just basically kind of trying to get out there, be a little social, but nothing too serious.
Well,
so,
what happened to that place you go and perform in?
Oh, the I haven't done that. You know, I've been trying to set up a gig, and I should do that. It's open mic Mondays at this place called The Pub at the End of the Universe, and I've been trying to put together these songs for it. They give you 3 songs, and I've got 2, but I need to, like, you know, practice them for a live version because I've never really done live before. I've always just done, you know, bedroom band kind of recording. So, you know, I'm kind of slowly getting up to that point where I'm going to do that.
Okay, well, Connie has a suggestion.
Oh.
Connie's eavesdropping, listening to us, and she says you can call in and ask Ion for some lyrics for your stuff.
Wow, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Connie always had a good answer for everything. She can solve any problem.
that's good.
Ion's pretty good. Ion's pretty good at taking traditional songs and then updating the lyrics. He can come up with them instantly.
Yeah, he's pretty. It's pretty phenomenal. I mean, that episode with the caller. I forget her name, but that was good stuff.
Yeah, that was
good. That was good chip radio.
Yes.